Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pace. Tonight, our topic is digital distraction. How are online games and social media impacting how our children are learning? From smartphones to apps to social networking and video games, digital media use by children and young people is on the rise. According to a 2010 study funded by the Kaiser Family Foundation, children between the ages of 2 and 18 spend an average of over 7 hours a day in front of a screen. That includes phones, computers, tablets, and TVs. And even young children are getting online, with almost half of all children 5 to 8 using a computer at least once a week, and 1 in 5 using one every day. What is the impact of all this digital media use on how kids learn at school and how they develop socially? Well, the San Francisco-based nonprofit Common Sense Media asked this very question to almost 700 teachers across the country, and the results show a strong consensus that online and digital entertainment are having a negative influence on students' learning skills. Tonight, we are going to talk about this study with its authors, those who funded it, and also hear from a local teacher about how digital media use is changing how students behave and learn in the classroom. And to have this conversation, I welcome to our studio Vicki Rideout. She's the study's author and the president of VJR Consulting. Vicki has directed numerous studies about the use of media by infants, toddlers, and children, and teenagers, including the decade-long Generation M study. Her research has been published in peer-reviewed journals such as Pediatrics and the Journal of the American Medical Association, and she has worked closely with media companies to develop health promotion campaigns aimed at young people. Welcome, Vicki.
Thanks so much.
We're also joined by Carolyn Knorr. She's parenting editor of Common Sense Media. And Caroline has more than 20 years of editorial and creative marketing experience and held many senior-level positions at Walmart.com, Walmart Stores, CNET, and Bay Area Parent Magazine. She specializes in translating complex information into bite-sized chunks to help families make informed choices about what their kids watch, play, read, and do. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you.
And finally, we're joined by Ronnie Habib. He's educational technology coordinator and a social science teacher at Gunn High School in Palo Alto. He leads professional development workshops in California and is a Google Apps for Education certified trainer and a Google certified teacher. He has taught history, mathematics, and economics courses at the middle and high school levels for over 9 years. Welcome, Ronnie.
Thank you for having me.
And for you, our listeners, we'd love to hear your questions and comments on this topic. We're going to open our phone lines in about 20 minutes, and you can dial 415-841-4134 to join our conversation. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our website. Just go to klw.org/programs/city-visions. So I wanted to start with you, Caroline Dunn. Why did Common Sense Media commission this study?
Well, I think that we really wanted to find out what some of the effects of entertainment and educational technology in the home is on kids' school performance and what the perspective of teachers is.
And did you have a hunch going in what you might find?
Well, that's a good question for Vicki. I think you're supposed to be completely objective, right, Vicki?
Absolutely. Yeah, we enter into this, as with all the studies that I do together with Common Sense Media, with interesting questions. Sometimes you have some hunches about what you might find, and plenty of times you get surprised, but you're always prepared for whatever response that you get.
So, Caroline, back to you just for a second there. What was it that prompted this study at this time? Was there something that made you concerned about wanting to answer this question?
Well, that's a great question. We actually have launched a really innovative learning ratings reviews department because we really do feel that apps really offer a lot of learning potential, and that parents can really harness the potential of just regular consumer apps that you can download from the iTunes store or the Android marketplace. And we really wanted to find out what some of the differences are in some of these apps that are not necessarily marketed as educational, but they really help to develop children's help develop developmental milestones like, social skills, cognitive skills, strategic thinking, things like that, versus some of the other educational products that are on the market that are more involved with academics. And I think that parents feel very rushed and pressured to get their kids interested in, you know, the academic programs, where Common Sense Media is feeling that these other types of programs can really help enhance the types of 21st century skills that are going to help kids be successful in the digital age.
So then, Vicky, you were approached to do a study. So what was the question that Caroline came to you with, and how quickly did you kind of reformulate that question?
Well, I mean, I think the thing that was on all of our minds is that kids today are just spending an enormous amount of time with media, and it's more time with media than they spend in any other activity, except maybe sleeping. They spend twice as much time with screen media as they do in the classroom, for example. So we know it's just this huge part of kids' lives. And the other thing that prompted us to look at this particular topic now is that there is just an absolute revolution going on in terms of the types of media that are available for kids, the types of content, the different platforms, the capabilities of those media now that we have things like social connections and geolocation services, instant access to information, and so on. And nobody to date had talked to teachers about how they think this revolutionary change in kids' use of and access to media is impacting academic skills. There have been a lot of studies that have been done with teachers about how they use educational media technologies in the classroom when you're using it on purpose for a curricular reason. But nobody had talked to teachers about, well, what do you see? What has been your experience in the classroom of the impact of all of this media use on these various academic skills of your students? So we just felt that would be a really appropriate thing for us to look at now.
So then what did you actually do?
We surveyed teachers. We used an online survey company, and we found a nationally representative sample of about 700 teachers. We talked to teachers from all across the country, all different grade levels, from kindergarten through high school, every different subject matter, all different types of schools, from the lower performing schools to the schools like the one that Ronnie is from in Palo Alto. And we asked them about a whole variety of different media. In their experience, what have they seen in terms of whether these different types of media have had an impact one way or the other? Have they had no impact? Have they had a positive impact? Have they had a negative impact on a whole variety of different skill sets of their students? And then we asked them to talk to us a little bit and to kind of write in some stories and examples about how they've seen, what they've witnessed in their years in the classroom.
So what did you find?
Well, the basic message that came out of it was that there was a strong, pretty consistent, widespread feeling among teachers that their students' use of media outside of school is having a negative impact on several important academic skills and some key aspects of their social development as well. The most significant areas for teachers were students' attention spans, where 71% said they felt that their entertainment media use outside the classroom was having a negative impact on attention span. On face-to-face communication, about 6 in 10 teachers said they thought media use was having a negative impact on that. And on writing skills was another one, where about 6 in 10 teachers talked about media use having a negative impact. And then some others were on homework, the quality of homework, and on critical thinking. And you know what really stood out for me, and when you asked earlier, Joseph, about, you know, what we go into this thinking and expecting, one of the things that I can admit that we sort of had a hunch we would find was that the teachers who were younger and more tech savvy would have a more positive view about the impact of entertainment media on their kids than the older veteran teachers or those who were little nervous about technology. That was not the case. And it really, really hit home for me that these findings, these conclusions were shared by teachers who are veteran teachers, who are new teachers, who are tech phobic and tech savvy, who are young and old, who use media a lot in their classroom, and who don't use media, who come from high-achieving schools and low-achieving schools. And that is what really sent up a red flag for me, that these are some findings we really need to stop and pay attention to.
So before we get Ronnie's reactions as a teacher, what can this study not tell us, or what conclusions can we not draw from this study? Because I think it's important that we understand what the methodology leads us to and what it can't lead us to.
Yeah, it's a very good question. What this study tells us is what teachers' opinions are about the impact that their students' entertainment media use may be having on their academic skills, based their opinions based on their experience in the classroom. What it does not do is give us any objective measures through any kind of testing or anything like that of, well, how are students' attention spans? Are young people's attention spans getting longer or shorter? Are their writing skills by any objective measures getting worse or not? But what it does tell us is that teachers are concerned about students' attention spans and writing skills, and they think, based on their experiences in the classroom, that their media use outside of school is having a negative impact.
And how confident can you be that they can isolate the factors that you suggest, that the actual digital media is actually what's causing these perceptions?
Yeah, I wouldn't view this the same way as I would a piece of causal research, you know, an experimental research. I don't think teachers can necessarily correlate for sure that, you know, this student spent 8 hours on a video game last night and that's what's having an effect on their academic performance. However, I think the reason we wanted to ask teachers' opinions is that they are highly valued professionals who have a unique perspective. They've been in the classroom. They spend more time with young people than anybody except possibly their parents, and a lot of times more time than their parents do. For those who've been in the classroom a number of years, they've seen students come and go. They've seen them year after year. It's not like a parent who has, you know, somebody who's a 12-year-old and then that's it. They have a 12-year-old for 1 year. No, the teachers who teach in middle school see 12-year-olds 10 years in a row, and they can notice the types of changes that are going on. And I think they pick up a lot from the students about what they're doing outside of school. When they hear them talking about the video games they played all night last night, and then they see them falling asleep in school and not handing in their homework the next day, they can make a pretty educated guess about what's going on.
And what of this this part that you could see relative consensus across the spectrum of teachers in terms of their ages and experience and the environments in which they teach and their proclivities, so to speak, or their attunement with digital media?
I'm sorry?
How do you understand that? Like, how do you get such a common response from a diverse group of teachers?
I guess what it says to me is that there's certainly some kind of kernel of universal truth here. And you know, it's not surprising. I mean, the other thing about when we're talking about how much time kids spend with media, this is something that has changed a lot over the past 5 to 10 years. I mean, the amount of time that youths are spending with screen media has gone from something like 4 hours a day in 1999 up to the more than 7 hours a day now. So I think that there has been such a profound shift. We now have personalized media. Everybody has a television set in their bedroom. Everybody has a computer in their bedroom. There's so many more interesting things to do on the computer than there were 10 years ago. We now have it in our pockets. The kids can be doing it on the school bus. They can be doing it in the hallway between classes. So I think that there was such a profound shift, perhaps, that I guess what it says to me is it's a fairly universal experience of teachers that, hey, we need to stop and take a look at what is happening with attention span, writing skills, face-to-face communication, and with the impact that this increasing media use may be having.
So Ronnie Habib, to go to you next as a teacher in Palo Alto, how does this resonate with you, the findings specifically, and then also how does this gel with what you're observing in the classroom?
Sure. So while the findings, are not, I don't see these findings quite as pronounced in my practice. I am not surprised at all that these are the findings. It makes complete sense to me, and I think this is great that the study was done, especially serving such a big sample of teachers. Because after all, teachers do spend a lot of time with kids, and they are professionals. So it does make a lot of sense to me that that's what was found. I think that what that means, though, is that we as teachers need to, we have a job to do. We have a job to figure out how to educate our students and work with our students to learn how to use these tools effectively. Because at the end of the day, these tools are not going away. We need to learn to, and by the way, these tools have a lot of positive things associated with them as well as negative things. So I'll give you some examples. Some of the positive attributes of social media, mobile devices, etc., is that they provide an avenue, another avenue for kids to socialize, be creative, and learn. When two students connect over Facebook or over Twitter about a certain academic topic, or not even academic, but just something they're both really interested in, it forms a, these students now seek to learn together in a community, and you have a much, much deeper way of learning about the material. When you have discussions in class in which you can incorporate people from outside of the class using, for example, Twitter and stuff like that, that introduces a really powerful component to the discussion in the classroom. And so, beyond the classroom, students can also connect with strangers over things that they have similar interests over. And teens have shown to be getting a lot of support. Most teens, I would say, still go for physical support, but a lot of times they can get it online, and I think that's an important thing to look at. It's actually been shown that sometimes, that there are students who have, in some really horrible cases, contemplating suicide, let's say, and are posting something on their Facebook, their Facebook tab, right? And they're saying, hey, status bar, right? And other students are seeing it, calling 911 and actually saving that person's life, right? So, and also one final thing is that the students, if they harness the power of social media really well, they can really make amazing change in the world by implementing, for example, fundraising in political events, by pointing to a cause that they really care about and bringing attention to it. That being said, obviously there's negative effects. Some of them are bullying. And bullying, I want to mention something about that, especially with cyberbullying, that I think is important. The problem with cyberbullying that we're seeing in schools more and more is the fact that cyberbullying is constant. It stays online. You don't get bullied once and then you don't feel, then essentially the incident is over. But, the picture of you being silly at a party stays online for a really long time. And that's an issue that is hard to deal with as educators and administrators in terms of stopping that, but also hard for, obviously, the student to deal with that. Then there's, obviously, sexting, privacy issues, and influenced by really highly targeted advertising.
So before we get into some more of the comments you make, I did want to point out that in my introduction, you're a Google Apps for Education certified trainer and a Google certified teacher. And obviously, we're talking about online apps.
Right.
And Google has a vested interest in this area. So I want to make sure for the listeners sort of clarify any affiliation you have with Google outside of your affiliation. Okay. And what is it? And what does it mean to have credentials?
Okay, sure. I'm happy to talk about that. So there are 750 Google certified teachers around the world really right now. We are not employed by Google. We do go to Google once for an academy, the Google Teacher Academy, which is a wonderful, wonderful place for teachers who are extremely creative and innovative in using technology and really bringing and enhancing student curriculum. It's basically computer using educators and Google come together and put that. But again, the teachers they're not paid by Google. We're not affiliated. We're not Google employees. I am a Google certified trainer, Google Apps for Education certified trainer as well, which basically means that I'm not employed by Google, but I've passed tests to show that I can lead professional development, workshops. I know what I'm talking about, right? But again, not being paid by them or anything.
Okay. Just want to make sure we clarify before we go too far into the conversation.
Sure.
And in case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight we're talking about digital distraction, how online games and social media outside of the classroom may be impacting how our children are learning and developing socially. And we have with us in the studio Caroline Knorr. She's parenting editor with Common Sense Media, Vicki Rideout, president of VJR Consulting, and the author of the study that we're discussing tonight. And just there, you were hearing from Ronnie Habib. He's an educational technology coordinator and social science teacher at the Gunn High School in Palo Alto. 415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation this evening. If you're a parent and want to talk about concerns around how digital media use by your children is affecting them in the classroom and outside of the classroom, and you want to know how to manage this or have some questions and concerns for our guests, 415-841-4134. If you're perhaps a student or a teen that wants to talk about the role that media plays in your life inside and outside of the classroom and the reactions you have to the findings you're hearing about tonight, 415-841-4134. You can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment at kalw.org/programs/city-visions. So I'm going to stay with you, Ronnie, for just a moment, because you said that you weren't terribly shocked by these results, and you're also not seeing the impact that Vicki is describing other teachers are seeing. Mm-hmm. Tell us about why that is, or why you think that is, in your classroom.
So I think that a big portion of, you know, so one example is, you know, the lack of focus, right? And I think that a huge, and not to toot my own horn here, okay, but a huge, you know, a really big predictor as to, you know, how focused students are going to be in the classroom is, you know, how engaging is the classroom, is the class to them, right? I mean, are they being asked to really kind of use all of their intellect, and are they challenged, right, when they're in classroom? I personally, and again, I'm speaking only from personal experience, and actually from experience of observing some of my colleagues at Gunn High School, who are incredible teachers, and so seeing basically students being fully engaged in the material and challenging them over and over, you know, leads to a situation where students, they don't disengage quite as much. I want to be clear that, you know, I'm not perfect by any means. Certainly, there are times where students, you know, that they might reach for their, you know, mobile device, right, their cell phone, try to check their, you know, Twitter feed or look at their Facebook, you know, update. But I will say that I find that to be rare. I am also teaching in a pretty, you know, high-achieving school, pretty affluent. I teach an advanced placement course. It's not, I wouldn't say that I represent every class, right? Mm-hmm. But I would also say that if you allow students to use this technology in a really interesting way, then they are also engaged even more in the classroom and also in the technology. I'll give you an example. So, the teacher's role, in my opinion, and the opinion of a lot of teachers at this point, has changed significantly because of social media and because of mobile devices and because of Google, I guess, to a certain extent, right, with searching being so simple. So, for example, let's say in my econ class, I want to talk about taxes. We're all talking about the fiscal cliff, right? Our students are hearing fiscal cliff everywhere, right? And so let's have a discussion about it. You know, what is the fiscal cliff? We start to talk about taxes. And then one of my students asked me, well, what is the highest tax rates that Americans pay? And to be quite honest with you, I don't have all the data like off the top of my head, you know. And the beautiful thing is that even if I did, they can fact check me right away. And I think that that's very powerful. If they can take out their device, and if I allow them to do that and take out the device and say, you know what, correct me if I'm wrong. Or, hey, add some stats to our discussion so that we can really learn about this together and add to the complexity of the discussion, then students really, really get into it.
But Caroline, I've been doing some other reading about reaction to this study, and I hear that some teachers maybe don't necessarily see it eye to eye with Ronnie, in the sense that they feel that the impact on kids' attention span in the classroom has led them to have to be kind of more show persons.
I thought that was really interesting,
and
too.
This is in a New York Times article that came out around the time of the release of this study in November. So tell us what you're hearing about how teachers see their role and a sense of how they should shift or need to shift or maybe don't want to shift.
Yeah. Well, you know, Common Sense Media really focuses on the advice, you know, for parents. How do we manage all of this? And I think one of the things that is really important is from a very early age, it's really important to just let your kids be bored. They need to be able to not have to play on your iPhone or your iPad while they're waiting for dinner at a restaurant. I mean, I hear so many parents complain about, oh, you know, we looked over at the other table and these three-year-olds, you know, they calmed down once they were able to play the iPad. It's okay to let your kids be bored, and you've got to be able to manage that. And I think that that's one of the ways that you're able to, you know, develop those coping mechanisms. We've got to be comfortable with that. And I think beyond that, we also have to be really good role models for our kids in the digital age. So, you know, if you're constantly reaching for your cell phone or any, also if you're constantly upgrading your cell phone. I mean, a lot of parents are really involved in the status of the, you know, the smartphone thing. And it's fun technology. And if you can afford it, great. But also kids are really absorbing that message, too. And they're really watching and learning from how we behave around technology.
Hmm. And Vicki, any other insights from other teachers that you've heard about around this issue of, you know, what's the role of the teacher in the classroom? Is it, you know, is it about, you know, doing whatever it takes to keep kids engaged and you just have to kind of adapt, or is it something, or is it something that they're sort of kind of holding out against?
Well, it's really a critical issue right now in school reform, and I think that, you know, the educational media platforms that we have right now offer tremendous opportunities inside the classroom if used well by creative teachers, and they may in fact change how learning happens in a positive way. And that's going to be incredibly important for students. I think there are a lot of teachers who feel like what they're worried about is the students whose attention spans have changed because of the constant video game use or multitasking that they're doing outside of the classroom. So are they able to focus on a particular task and persist with it, which is a key skill, as we know, in school and in life? And do they still have that ability? As one of the teachers in our survey said, my kids just don't know how to stick with something that is hard until they master it. They just want to hit the restart button, and they're used to sort of instant rewards. And so, yes, we did hear from teachers who said, well, a lot of teachers feel like, I've got to compete with video games. I've got to be as entertaining as a video game in that classroom. Well, that might be a good challenge to a teacher. Yes, you have to engage students. You have to keep them interested in learning and find ways to make the class lively and engaging. At the same time, you know, there may be things that teachers can learn from students' love of digital media, that they can learn from students' love of gaming and of social media and ways to incorporate that into the classroom. At that same time, there are these other issues to do with writing skills and attention span and face-to-face communication, where I think teachers have to find ways to adapt. They have to find ways to go out of their way to proactively nurture certain skills that may be weakening due to what kids are doing outside of school that they didn't have to spend that time nurturing in the past.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go to our first caller, Tyler from Alameda. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Yeah. My question is this actually a situation where maybe the schools are behind? At the rate that media is being created and consumed, do you feel like maybe it's moving beyond the teachers and that it's something that the schools should catch up with?
What do you think, Ronnie?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent it's true. I mean, media is moving very, very, technology in general is moving very, very fast, especially social media sites, right? And I would say that, yeah, it is the job of schools to you know, to work to catch up to it. And in the same time, it's still, you know, it is still the job of schools to be able to, you know, to bring in a very, you know, rigorous, you know, and sort of basic, quote unquote, curriculum, K through 12 curriculum, where you cover like the important stuff that, that you know students need to know when, before graduating high school, and it's a balance. It's not an easy thing to do, but if I can just add something real quick to our conversation from before, you know, I completely agree that we also we have the responsibility to teach students how to interact face-to-face to one another. Like, more than social media sites, I think mobile devices and gaming are sort of, quote-unquote, culprits of students not being able to tune into their emotions, not being able to active listen, not being able to simply talk to strangers. You know, I mean, active listening, comfort in face-to-face situation, having empathy towards others, expressing emotions using I statements and working effectively within groups are skills that are 21st century skills and that need to be developed at a very young age and sustained throughout high school. So along with, you know, learning how to use technology effectively and you know, coaching our students outside of school on how to not become addicted, you know, et cetera, and all those things, we need to do that as well. So all of our callers can, and all of our listeners can see that being a teacher is a hard work.
Thanks so much, Tyler, for your call. This is City Visions on 91.7 KALW FM and on KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing digital distraction. Are online games and social media impacting how children learn and develop socially? We have our guests here in the studio with us tonight. That's Ronnie Habib that you just heard from. He's a teacher at the Gunn High School in Palo Alto and also an educational technology coordinator there. He has also developed workshops in California as a Google Apps for Education certified trainer and a Google certified teacher, taught history, mathematics, and economics courses at the middle and high school level. We also are joined by Vicky Rideout. She's the studies author that we're discussing tonight, and the president of VJR Consulting. And she has done multiple studies on the impact of media and of the use of media by infants, toddlers, children, and teenagers, and has had her studies published in peer-reviewed journals such as Pediatrics and the Journal of the American Medical Association. And finally, we're joined by Caroline Knorr. She's parenting editor at Common Sense Media with more than 20 years of experience in editorial and creative marketing. And with Common Sense, she specializes in translating information on how kids watch, play, and read the world around them and how to inform their families on how to manage it all. 415-841-4134 is the number to call to join our conversation on this topic tonight. If you're a teacher out there who has some interesting comments or questions about this topic and how you see the impact in entertainment-based media that's used outside the classroom, how it's impacting your work inside the classroom. We want to hear from you. 415-841-4134. And you can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment at klw.org/programs/city-visions. Okay, so let's go to the parents again here, because as Ronnie was kind of setting us up for talking about how to be, you know, careful stewards of this technology and how we monitor ourselves, but also monitor our children. So, Caroline, to go back to you, then something I wanted to point out is that the American Pediatrics Association has recommended that children are to not be placed in front of a screen at any point in time, and that limiting screen time for children, and I imagine, I don't have the actual number in front of me, but I'm sure it's not 7 hours a day.
It's about an hour a day.
Okay,
actually.
Great.
And that's all media.
And all media. And this is including the media that they may be exposed to at school?
That's everything.
That's
every
everything.
Screen, yeah.
So we're way beyond that.
Way beyond
and
that.
We know that parents, we know they're not following this recommendation because we see it all out there. So the question is how to engage parents in a conversation where they're not become guilt-ridden around how they're discharging their parental duties here and how to think through what is a healthy engagement with online media.
Right. Well, every family is going to have their own, you know, needs and their own values and their own way of deciding what is really right for them. There actually was a huge, you know, eruption on the blogosphere after the American Academy of Pediatrics reasserted their no screen time for under 2 years old, because, you know, all these moms are going, well, you know, sometimes, you know, you just have to go to the bathroom, you know, and you just need to put your kid in front of a screen. So Common Sense Media, you know, advises parents to really evaluate what their needs are and go from there. But we think it's absolutely critical that parents do stay involved with their kids' media and make good choices in terms of quality, the quality of what they're exposing their kids to, and the quantity. So you do need to set some limits around it.
So given that it's hard, given people's lifestyles, and that, you know, that's an issue that seems to cut across all socioeconomic strata, that parents are busier these days, no matter what they're doing outside of the home or inside of the home. How do you turn that into realistic advice?
I think it's also really important for parents to remember. I mean, there's so much great, you know, there's so much great technology, so much great media out there, and so many things that can really enhance a kid's life or a family's life. So, you know, we definitely advocate for families to really try and use media together. But I think that one thing that's really important to keep in mind is that all the you know, childhood development experts still say that the most important thing in raising kids is to, you know, for kids to have a, you know, a loving, you know, caregiver who can provide, you know, good attention to them. So, you know, nothing is going to really take the place of that. So I think if parents do understand that, you know, it's not absolutely critical that my kid learn this ABC program. What's really more important is to have a conversation or to read to your kid. So really try and understand what's right developmentally.
Vicki?
Yeah, by the way, parents have a lot of these same concerns that teachers have. We know from previous research with parents. In particular, one of the things is what they see perhaps happening slowly with their kids with regard to face-to-face communication. And I think a lot of parents are suddenly looking and saying, gosh, I took my kid to my brother-in-law's house and I was really embarrassed when he couldn't shake hands and look my brother-in-law in the eye and talk to the adults and answer a simple question from them. Or we went for Thanksgiving to a relative's house, and I looked up, and there were all of the tweens in the family, all of the cousins, sitting in a row on the couch. They like each other. They never see each other, and they weren't interacting with one another at all. They were all there with their heads down in their cell phones. So parents are now saying, oh, gosh, what do I do? So I don't think these are just things that we're, you know, hitting parents over the head with. And we don't mean to be anti-media here. I think what we're saying is there's reason to look at limits. There's reason to make careful choices about the quality. There's reasons to be mindful about how you choose to incorporate media in your family's life. And also to perhaps be proactive and go out there and look for opportunities to nurture these skill sets that may be falling by the wayside.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go to Nathan from Palo Alto. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yep. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, so I had two questions. One is, you know, social media has been around for a while, and my question is, how do we know through the studies that it's negatively impacting students if they've used social media throughout their whole, you know, high school career? So my question is, how does a teacher know if it's negatively impacting them since it's been there the whole time they've been in high school? That's my first question.
Well, the answer to that is we don't know. What we do is we've asked teachers their opinions about whether they've seen over the course of their experience an impact from what their students are doing outside of the classroom in terms of all kinds of media, TV, video games, social networking, texting, and so on these different sets of academic skills. So it is teachers' opinions based on their experience, and we don't know that they're correct. But I think the sort of universality of what we heard back is sort of a cautionary sign and an indication that we need to pause and really think about this.
So I guess maybe in like the research lingo, this was sort of hypothesis generating, right? You want, sure, now maybe want to go back and start doing some of these studies that actually try to objectively quantify, mm-hmm, these perceived effects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Caroline.
Well, Vicky also ran the social life mm-hmm study that, mm-hmm, we did, social life, social media, mm-hmm, study that we did last fall, I think it was, where we interviewed teens who actually reported that they felt that they were using social media too much. They said they wish they could get off Facebook, but they feel that they, you know, kind of compelled to be on it so they can stay in touch with their friends.
Ronnie mentioned the word addiction.
Addiction. Well, and teens also reported that they wished that their friends could get off it too. They were like, I wish that, you know, that my friends were texting all the time. I'm with my friend. I want to hang out with them. So we also have that body of research.
Hmm. And then you said you had a second question, Nathan? Yeah, I'm sorry. We'll have to get you up. There we go. Nathan, go ahead.
Yeah, so I love the conversation. And I was thinking, you know, do you think, this is for Ronnie, do you think it's a good idea to implement, for example, a Twitter feed or a Facebook page for a specific classroom and kind of have it like homework to go on the Facebook page and, you know, do commenting or even do research through social search rather than through Google, and then use that discussion in the classroom. So bringing social media research and engagement for homework and then bringing that to the actual classroom. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's a really, really good thing. Do you want to work in Palo Alto? No, just kidding. No, I'm serious. I think that it's a really important thing to do because that's the reality our students are faced with. So they need to learn how to use. I mean, imagine the power of basically running a discussion in the classroom or outside of it, like for homework, as you're saying. Instead of just talking about the fiscal cliff, we also have a hashtag, fiscal cliff, right? And then you hear about what a lot of people are saying about it. And strangers can come and offer their opinions about the discussion. And then you can also tweet something as a teacher or as a student. Everybody else follows, chimes in. Their friends follow and chime in. I mean, I think it's absolutely a very powerful way of using technology. So, yes.
Thanks so much, Nathan, for your call. My follow-up question to that is, though, I don't think anyone's questioning the value of harnessing digital media for an educational purpose. I think the point of our conversation tonight is what's happening outside, sure, of the classroom, sure, that is really not focused in these ways and how that is impacting students. 415-841-4134. And we have Amy on the line who wants to ask us a little bit more about that. Amy, welcome to the program.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I am an elementary school teacher in San Francisco, and I've noticed that a couple of my students are allowed to access their media until quite late at night. And I'm hoping that you can help me find some data to provide these parents to back up my plea to limit the consumption.
And what's it like for you in the classroom?
Well, for me, these particular students, they are lethargic. They actually happen to be overweight. And they have a really hard time focusing, and they're tired each day. And I just want to have some data to show these parents to say, it's not just me. There's actually something going on with their brain and with their physiology that is negatively impacting their learning when they're up for so many hours late at night each night.
And have you had this conversation with parents? And if so, how have they responded to you?
I have, and there are different responses. Some of them seem to be interesting excuses like, well, we all watch TV or we all are on the internet, so I don't see the problem. And then in some cases, it's that they're unsupervised and their children are allowed to do what they like, sadly.
All right. Well, did you have something else you wanted to say there?
No, that's it. I'd love to hear your comments.
Okay. I'm going to have you take your answer off the air. Thanks so much, Amy, for your call. Vicky.
Well, I want to say to Amy that this is something that we did see from many teachers across the country. Again, it's not everybody, but there are teachers who have some students in their classroom who, including in elementary school, where the kids will come in and talk about, I mean, teachers wrote these stories in verbatim in the survey. The kids are talking about having spent so many hours playing particular video games. In some cases, they were video games that are not appropriate for kids of that age, and that the kids are falling asleep in class. And so that clearly is a child who's in a home where perhaps there's a parent who is not focused in the way that we would hope they would be on what's going on with the kid. That's probably not typical. I think maybe with the middle school and the high school students, you get into the issue of the cell phone in the bedroom and what's happening with that. And a lot of kids are finding it hard to stop looking at their cell phone and stop looking at checking their Facebook on their mobile device before they go to sleep. And so there are some things that parents can do, and there are some very specific things they can do. Number one is simply to set a limit, figure out what their limit is. They can look at the AAP, they can look at Common Sense Media, but what do they think is appropriate for their child? And sometimes parents will say, well, I can't control what my kid does. They've got a computer in their room, they've got a cell phone. Set the limit. If they set the limit and have that conversation with the child, that does make a difference in what the child does. Another thing is to look at getting TVs perhaps out of kids' bedrooms, because we know from many pieces of research that kids who have a TV in their bedroom spend a lot more time watching television, not surprisingly, than other kids do. And for parents to try to make homework as sacrosanct a period of time as possible. In other studies I've done, a third of kids have said that they are almost always using media at the same time that they're doing homework. And multitasking during homework is really not the best way to get homework done. Neither is rushing through your homework so that you can finish it, you know, according to your parents' rule, and then get off to do your Facebooking that they said you could only do after you finished your homework.
415-841-4134 to join our conversation tonight about digital distraction, how online games and social media outside the classroom are impacting how children are learning and developing socially. With our guests here, Caroline Knorr, Ronnie Habib, and Vicky Rideout here on City Visions. 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And so what I wanted to ask is, you know, maybe to pull us back, was this the kind of response people had to television when it first came out? It's kind of a leading question, but what's different compared to when we've had other technological leaps that have, you know, been demonized?
Well, I wanted to answer that because that inevitably comes up. And I think that one of the differences is something that Ronnie touched on, is the sort of it's isolated. You know, kids are just playing an app on their phone or texting a friend, and parents don't know what is going on. They don't know what they're playing. They don't know what they've downloaded. They don't know what they're listening to necessarily, and they don't know who they're talking to. And without that information, it's really hard to set limits because also with your kid, you know, just sort of walking around, and kids feel that these are, you know, their own personal devices, and so they should have, right.
They're entitled. No limits.
Yeah, right. So that's one of the differences between the sort of the digital age and TV time.
Yes, Ronnie.
Yeah, I think the main difference, we're talking about like older media, like TV, social media, the really powerful part of it that could eventually become addictive is the fact that it is social. I mean, that's huge, right? Sitting in front of the TV, certainly you can get addicted to that. And certainly you can get a lot of stuff, you know, get into bad habits with that and become passive. But when you can, especially for the kids who are having a hard time socializing in person with people, right? Having this outlet can be initially healthy, and then it can very, very fast become an unhealthy thing, simply because you feel like, I mean, we're social creatures. You're connecting to others. That's the beauty of this, and also to a certain extent. I mean, it's like just like anything else. You need to do this in moderation. And parents play a very important role outside of the classroom.
And kids are getting that constant feedback, which, like you said, can be really fun. But, you know, unless you have like a really thick skin, it's hard to take that all the time.
Right.
Kids are not just consuming media, but creating it as well.
Sure. And we have a comment from a caller that didn't stay on the line, but suggesting, is it linked to the advent of the smartphone? Because video games have been out for a while. TV has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's the smartphone is it's in your pocket and you can take it out surreptitiously pretty much anywhere, and there's really no limits.
Yeah, we did see a huge increase in time spent with media as soon as we got mobile media.
Yes.
The other thing is we have new things to do now that we didn't have before, such as social networking. I mean, that's something that didn't exist mm-hmm. just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. Same with texting. It's another thing to occupy your time. That it's a capability that we just didn't have a number of years ago.
And now, by the way, you can watch TV on your smartphone.
Right. Well, where were you? That came out a couple of years ago. But Caroline, your point is very well taken, which is how do we allow children to kind of be bored and not see it as a negative thing? Yes.
I was just going to say that. I mean, it is, in my opinion, mobile devices are wonderful in the sense that, you know, they help the teacher become not the vessel of information, but a person who can now get students curious, and then they can just go and fly and get all the information they want. But in the same time, it is mobile devices, I think, that mostly led to, you know, students essentially being with their device. I'll just say a quick, really quick story. I, you know, at Gunn, we give the CASI exam, right? It's the exit exam for the state. Most of our students finish it very early. Okay, so you're stuck basically in a classroom with 30 teenagers who are done, bored out of their mind, and you have to give them, like, something to do for an hour. So what I told them, in my case, I said, you know what, guys, we're done. Great. Let's just, you know, socialize. Let's talk to one another. Do you know, put everything away. Just talk, you know, like get to know one another a little bit. And as soon as I was done with my instructions, 75% of my kids pulled out their mobile device. Mm-hmm. And most of them were smartphones. And I stopped them and I said, I don't think you understood the instructions. The instructions were actually like, we're going to converse with one. We're going to look at each other in the eyes. We're going to talk face to face and converse, you know. And I'll never forget the looks that I've gotten from the kids. The looks were, some of it was like, I don't understand what you're saying right now. And some of it was like, some of them were looks of fear. Like, I have to actually talk to a person, you know. And that, I think, is something that, you know, not just parents, but teachers need to do a better job of educating kids to give them those skills, you know.
We have an email from Mary, and she says, I keep hearing about social media fostering creativity. I don't see that at all. I see students plagiarizing, copying, and repeating others' work. Creativity is not media or technology dependent, but a combination of inspiration and knowledge and experience. Your guest who keeps telling us that he... I'm assuming it's you, Ronnie, knows what he's talking about, uses examples that are simplistic. Students can't just look things up. They need to know how to decipher it and evaluate it. Learning to raise money via the web isn't much of an education. It's a limited task. All the examples are dependent upon individual focus and determination. The poor are getting computers. The rich get teachers. So, Ronnie, I think she was referring to you, so okay. I want to get you to comment.
Well, thank you for the comment. I completely agree that deciphering information is a really important task, but that's the beautiful thing about technologies that allows teachers and students to get access to information, and the job of the teacher is to help the students decipher between good and bad information. It's much easier right now to find bad information out there. But that, you know what, that is a skill that we need to teach. And without technology, it's actually pretty hard to do it. I agree with the last point she made in terms of, richer schools getting more technology, poorer schools not getting as much. I think that that's an equity issue that has to be addressed for sure.
Actually, but she said the poor are getting computers, the rich get teachers.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood that. So, but in terms of creativity, let's not kid ourselves. Technology really allows for an incredible amount of creativity. I'll give you an example. If students, for example, as Caroline was saying, are creators of material right now, and students learn from one another. For example, for my midterm review final, I have students, you know, create basically screencasts and share with one another via YouTube, via ShowMe, via other really important tools. And students, while learning from one another, are able to converse about what they learn from one another outside of class, and are able to understand the material in a much deeper way from one another with my guidance. And there are just a ton of examples of creativity. So the fact that, you know, this caller is saying that technology leads to more. Plagiarism. Certainly, we have to talk about that. But if used correctly, it leads to an incredible amount of creativity.
And I think, Vicky, one of the points in your findings in your study is that not everything was negative, right? There
Absolutely.
Was some positive impact. Multitasking skills were one of them. And what was the other
area?
Well,
not just that, but I mean, one of the things that Ronnie had spoken about earlier, which is that teachers did comment that their students were exposed to more diverse points of view, different perspectives, that it helped their social awareness and kind of their community engagement. And so for a lot of students, it's having that positive effect. And some of the teachers, especially the tech-savvy teachers, did see a benefit in terms of creativity. If you have somebody who understands the capabilities of the tools and can impart that to the student and help the student, then it can be a real positive tool.
So I imagine if we look forward towards the future, the implication is that as this world continues to be saturated with this kind of endeavor, meaning digital media as kind of as the hub for so much of creation or creativity, that we're going to have kids know how to manipulate that, right?
Of course.
But how do we correct for some of these things that you're finding or that are perceived by teachers, which is the writing skills, the social stunting, whatever you want to call it, and the attention span issue? Those sound concerning as well. Is the answer within digital media itself as well, or do we have to kind of sort of rejigger some things and go back to the basics in classrooms to make sure we correct for some of this? Any thoughts?
Well, I do think that both parents and teachers have to look for opportunities, specifically have to create opportunities to proactively nurture writing skills, face-to-face communication, and concerted attention and focus. And I want to say something about writing in particular. I just want to give a shout out for the importance of writing and for the number of teachers. You could feel it palpably coming off of this survey that they're really concerned about their students' writing skills. And, you know, if you have a teacher who's saying, go ahead and make me a PowerPoint on this instead of write me a paper, and that's a problem. Sure. So we have to look for ways to nurture writing.
We have to slip in one more caller here, and that's Adi. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. It's a really exciting program to hear about. I'm a high school teacher within San Francisco Unified School District, and there's a couple points I want to talk about based on the conversation.
You have to make them brief, though. We're running up against the hour here.
I work for San Francisco Peer Resources. We work with kids who then work with other kids within their high schools and middle schools, doing exactly what you're talking about, active listening, mentoring, tutoring, peer counseling, all that face-to-face, really important skills development. All the schools do presentations as well that they research and then educate their peers on. And my students that I work with at Lowell High School actually this semester have created a presentation looking at the importance of internet privacy and the importance of unplugging and doing face-to-face.
Right.
You know, having those kinds of skills and how they're going to help them in their future. So, again, great that you're all talking about this.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Adi. So, we're a couple of minutes left or even less than that. Any last comments from you, Ronnie, and then Caroline, I'll give you the last word.
Sure. I think just to address the last point we talked about, I think it's really critical that we all, that parents and teachers, you know, spend time really educating kids on how to use these tools effectively, how to set a time limit on them, of course, and as well as in conjunction with it, help them develop their you know, human social skills. None of these tools are going away. This is the reality we're faced with. We need to know how to use it effectively, and we need to connect as people.
And Caroline, again, in your final comments, how do you guide parents at this point and any other kernels you want to share with us?
Well, I'll double down on what Ronnie said, and I also think that's just really critically important that parents do understand that media does matter, and teachers are telling us that the time that their kids are spending with media is having an effect on their learning. So be involved and know that you're the person who's in charge of your kids' media.
And maybe unlike other areas of parenting, but perhaps similar, I'm not sure, parents may need to start looking at themselves as and their own behavior around media before they start laying down the law with their kids.
Absolutely.
And that's City Visions for this evening. I want to thank our guests. And that was Caroline Knorr with Common Sense Media and Ronnie Habib with the Gun School in Palo Alto and Vicki Rideout. Thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
For a link to this and other City Visions programs to learn about podcasts and to subscribe to alerts, go to klw.org/programs/city-visions. Our producer this evening was Victoria Thorpe. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Thanks to you both. Our senior producer is Susie Britton. Join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next week when we talk about the role of the corner grocer in the community as it tries to survive in a sea of chain stores. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.